That's the transition for you right there. Chad, are you on the phone?
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the podcast. I said welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks. Good to be here.
what are you doing on this lovely day?
Sitting around. I'm really not doing much of anything, to be perfectly honest. I don't have anything to do these days.
Cool. What are your what were your thoughts on game one, Knicks Celtics? Break it down for me. Not really. I don't want you to get too technical.
All right.
Just give me like a loose opinion, if that's even a phrase.
I'll give you my loosest grip on the situation that I can possibly come up with. How's that?
Perfect.
First of all, I thought that they had an opportunity to win this game. I thought they should have won this game. I was really disappointed with what their output was in the second half. I mean, heading into halftime, I was pretty optimistic. I think a lot of people probably were. And then, I mean, I don't know if they ran out of gas or if the Knicks really tightened up their D or if they just went cold. I think there's a lot of factors, but I was really kind of annoyed with Jason Kidd in the second half. I mean, it's hard for me to say that we were beaten by Carmelo or that they were beaten by Carmelo because, he's going to do his thing pretty much
right
night in, night out.
Carmelo's at the point in his career where it's like you're not going to freak out about stopping. He's going to get his 30 points every game. That's just what it is. So you sort of accept that and you move on from there.
Right. And you expect that, J.R. Smith is going to get his touches, he's going to get his looks, and he's probably going to put up somewhere between 15 and 20 a game, and that's fine. But, I think the mental errors, the turnovers in the second half, that was really bothering me because it wasn't, I feel like the Celtics beat themselves. I don't think the Knicks beat them in game one. I think they beat themselves. I think they didn't take care of the basketball on the offensive end like they should have. There were a lot of careless passes and the type of passes where defenders are getting back in transition and they're throwing passes are getting picked off by trailers. I mean, that should never happen.
Right.
You've got to be aware of where you are on the court.
So I think a couple of things. First of all, those passes are passes that the Celtics have been making for the better part of the last, I'd say, couple months. So these are some of the things that concern you more. Because I agree. I think that they played well enough to win. I think they played well enough to show that this is going to be a series. That doesn't mean that it can't end up in a sweep or five games. But, chances are the these are going to be close games. But
yeah.
I think a huge overlooked factor in all this is the fact that the Knicks are the number two seed and the Celtics are the seventh seed. Not only the seventh seed, but they finished with a 41-40 record.
Right.
I think there's a certain level of what we've come to expect from the team as long as Garnett and Pierce and Doc are there. But the fact is that aside from that one stretch after Rondo got hurt, I'd say I'll give it okay. Obviously, there was the 7-0 stretch right after he got hurt, but I'll give him another week or so after that. Aside from those 3 weeks, they haven't been a good team this year. We were holding out hope that it would happen in the playoffs, and the fact that it didn't happen in game one doesn't mean that it's not going to happen at all. But the fact that they did struggle in game one, I don't think it's much of a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I also tend to think that obviously Celtics are down. They don't have two of their best players, and I think it's not so much glaring to me that Rondo is not there. It's more that Solinger is not there because they just can't do anything in the paint in terms of rebounding. They just don't have the manpower to do it.
When you have a team like the Knicks who are just going to bomb threes, right? Your best chance and when you're playing a team that like the Knicks that bombs threes and you are the worst team in the equation, your best chance to win is for the Knicks to not hit their shots and to take advantage of that. But when the Knicks are not hitting their shots but get two, three tries, and not every time down the court, but enough times, you're just not going to win. Your one advantage, becomes a disadvantage.
Right, especially when I heard this, they mentioned this on the telecast, that the Celtics are the worst team in the league when it comes to second chance points. They just don't get a lot of second chance points. So to your point, when you're giving up second and third chances to the Knicks and you're not getting any of those on the offensive end, as far as the Celtics are concerned, you're not going to win a lot of games that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, and part of that is that the Celtics have always shot well from the field. So it's just there hasn't been as many opportunities to get second chance points. I want to look it up right now. But and also, that's not, that's been Doc Rivers' thing for at least the last 6 years or 5 years, that he's just not concerned about offensive rebounding. I think maybe that comes with having an older team and a team that probably, doesn't necessarily thrive in an up and down game, is that he's just more concerned with his team getting back on defense than he is crashing the boards. But what did they shoot? Yeah, okay, so they shot 46.5% from the field this year, which was the sixth best in the league. So, there aren't quite as many available. I know you talked about Jason Kidd for a second earlier. What I'd like from you, so I'm gonna go through Jason Kidd's career. So he's played for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams. Well, he played for Dallas twice. Give me his number all the way through. Like, what was it, like, his rookie year in Dallas? What was his number?
All right. So I believe Kidd has only been two numbers since he's been in the league. I believe those are 32 and 5. I could be wrong, and maybe he had.
You are wrong. When he went back to Dallas, so he went.
Hold on. Okay, so he was 2 when he went back to Dallas.
Yeah, there you go. So he was 5 with Dallas, 32 with Phoenix, 5 with the Nets, then 2 when he went back to Dallas, and I'm interested to find out why that was. That is because.
Well, who else?
Wow.
Because Juwan Howard was there and he was 5.
So this is strange. Okay, so real quick, you have an obscure ability to remember the number of just about every player who's ever suited up in any sport, whether it's college, whether it's pros, no matter how many teams he played in the pros. And as we build up this podcast, I'm hoping that people will get to know that and maybe become a little impressed by you. And through the conversations, maybe we'll find some cool things like this. So when Jason Kidd went back to the Mavericks, he was number 2. And you said, and what was your guess for why he couldn't wear 5?
I thought it might have been because Howard was there and he was 5.
Okay, so this is where it gets interesting. So you're right. But Juwan Howard was on that team and was wearing number 55. Josh Howard was on that team and was wearing number 5.
I meant Josh Howard.
But how ridiculous is that? You had 2 Jay Howards, 5 and 55. Yeah. And then you had Jay Kidd who couldn't wear it because of those two dudes.
So should we infer from that he was like, he would have been number 3 in line to get number 5, because Juwan Howard would have taken 5 if Josh Howard didn't have it, and then you got, and think that it would go to Kidd as the wily veteran returning, also as a guy who's already worn that number for that franchise in the past, and Josh Howard says, I don't think so, man. No.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there was a little bit more to it. Well, first of all, because that trade happened in the middle of the season, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that happened in the middle of the year. So maybe that's a little bit more difficult. Maybe you're not going to come in and make a guy give you your number right in the middle of the year.
Yeah. But here's another. So here's the potentially interesting part of it is, so 5, you flip it upside down, you have 2, right?
Is that right?
Well, think about it. The number 2 upside down is 5.
Well, I guess it depends on how curvy you make your 5s, but okay.
Okay, fair enough. He was 5 at Cal. Then he goes to the pros and he takes 32 with the Suns, right? Or no, he was drafted by the Mavs.
Yes, he was drafted by the Mavs. No, he was, so yeah.
He goes to Phoenix and 2 plus 3 is 5. So he's still somewhere in that realm of 5 his entire career, whether it's an upside down 2 or a 32. Adding up to 5.
All right, so I'll be impressed if you know this. So why? Yeah. So obviously he changed numbers when he went from Dallas to Phoenix. Can you remember a number 5 on that Phoenix team? Was there a reason you think that he switched? Maybe it was he just wanted like a change of scenery. He just wanted a new Jason Kidd, so he went for the for the additive property on that one, or maybe there was a veteran standing in his way.
Boy, on that Suns team,
let's have some fun. Okay, first of all, I just looked it up, and it's not true. So there was no other five. And this goes back to the book that you and I think are going to have, which was the story behind every number.
Yeah.
Is that a creative enough title? The story behind every number. All right. So what number was KJ, Kevin Johnson?
7.
He was 7. You're correct. What number was?
By the way, let me just point out here that I think the KJs, those Converse, which I wore in high school basketball, those to me are some of the greatest basketball shoes of all time. And I'm not a big fan of Converse in general, but I loved those sneakers.
I think
you remember the ones I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, well, listen, I think everything about Kevin Johnson is pretty underrated.
That's fair to say.
I mean, he was, and I don't know what the reason is or was. I don't know if it's that he never won a title, or you know even when he was at his best, he was sort of, you know, he was on the team with Barkley, and Barkley got all the accolades there. I mean, even, you know, Dan Marley, I think, probably got a little bit more attention than KJ did over those years. But, I mean, the guy played, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Played 12 years and had, you know, averaged more than 20 points a game 5 times. There was a string of 4 years in Phoenix, all right, culminating with the season before they made it to the finals. So 1989 to 1992, where he averaged, here were his points, 20.4, 22.5, 22.2, and 19.7, all right? His assists those years, 12.2, 11.4, 10.1, and 10.7.
Wow. So that's double-doubles 4 years in a row. And he was,
that's not only double-doubles, that's 20 and 10.
Right.
I mean, that's another awesome level.
Didn't he win a dunk contest 1 year too?
No, but he had the great dunk over. I think he has 2 great dunks. He's got one over Hakeem, and I think he has one over Mark Eaton as well. Once we get this,
once we get this
working, you know, with the podcast on this site, I think, you know, I'd love to, you know, link to YouTube videos of those dunks. You know, we could have sort of an interactive conversation, but that's probably going to be edited out. But getting back to what brought us to KJ,
yeah.
KJ and Jason Kidd, what do they have in common besides their position?
They date the same woman. I don't know.
University of California.
KJ went to Cal. That popped into my head, but I didn't. I thought he went to. I thought he was an Arizona guy, but no, KJ went to Cal. Really?
Yeah, he did. All right, sticking with that Suns team. What number was Cedric Ceballos?
23.
Is that right? Yeah, you know what?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so listen to this. On the roster that I was looking at, he was 23 his first couple years with Phoenix. Then he went to the Lakers and was 23. He came back to Phoenix for 35 games in 1998, and he wore number 1. Otherwise, he was 23 for the rest of his career.
He played around in it, didn't he? He played for several teams.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Phoenix and the Lakers were his best stops, and he had one decent season with Dallas. Very decent. He averaged 16 points a game, played 30 minutes a night for the 2000 Mavericks. And now he's like, the last I heard of Ceballos, he was literally the hype man at the Phoenix Suns game, like pretty much the equivalent of like what Coach Willie May used to be for the Celtics.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of sad, but and another little fact about Ced, his middle initial is Z.
Z?
Z, as in I think it's Cedric Zydrunas Ceballos.
That's what I was gonna say. It's got to be Zydrunas.
All right, so getting back to the Celtics, game 2 is tomorrow night. We're having this conversation on Monday. And I got a lot of Knick fan friends, you know, Pittman and a couple of his friends. I'd like to get in on this as the podcast grows older and wiser. So what do you think? I mean, obviously things need to change if they're going to come home with a split. But, you know, more than anything, I'm ready for them to lose tomorrow and for everyone to just freak the hell out. You know, just the way they're freaking out after game one. That's just the way it is in today's world. And if they win, yeah. That's the thing. So they lost yesterday or Saturday, and the initial reaction was just the end of the world. If they win tomorrow, they will now be guaranteed to win the series. You know, that's just the way it goes. And you forget that. Listen, you go back to even the Eastern Conference Finals against Miami last year. They came back 0-2. They were down. Not only were they down 0-2, but the game two loss in Miami was pretty much as devastating as a loss could be. You know, Rondo had his 40-point game. They had the awful call at the end where it was a no call, where he should have got to the line, potentially won that game. And that was the game that no one could ever come back from. That was it. Of course, they come back. They win two in Boston. Dwayne Wade misses a three-pointer at the buzzer, and I think it was game three or game four that would have pretty much clinched it, but they win two. They go back. Game five is what matters. They stole game five. They're coming back here with a chance to win the series. So, you know, that is not only the way it went that series. I mean, that's just the way it goes. I mean, you can't react, especially when, like you said, man, they played well enough to win that game up until the end, and the end is all that matters. But there's plenty of good to build on. For me, my biggest concern is probably Kevin Garnett. He doesn't look right. What did you think about him?
Yeah, I agree. I thought he got off to a good start. I think didn't he hit two jumpers? He had I think four of their first several points. He hit his first jumper, his first like 18 footer, and I thought, okay, he's going to get off to a good start. Got a stroke going. He's going to be. You know, he'll be good for 20-10, and then he just, I mean, I don't know if they stopped going to him or what it was. I don't particularly remember, but I don't even, I mean, after that, I mean, I scarcely remember him having much of an impact on the game at all, which is really, I mean, it's concerning. And if that happens in game two, then we're looking at a similar outcome, especially when, I mean, not to get off the Garnett topic, but if they have another pathetic output from their bench like they did in game one. I mean, they don't have a chance in this series. They need production from the bench. I mean,
well, listen, let me say this. If they get another pathetic performance from their bench in game two, they have no chance of winning game two. Like that doesn't, and that's like what you just said is sort of the problem that I have with the way like this is handled. Is like just because they have two bad games doesn't mean they have a third bad game. I mean, it makes you, you know, less confident, but it's only all that matters is the last game.
Here's why I say that though, Rich. In terms of the bench, and we look at the guys who are used to getting production from in terms of the Celtics, and it's Crawford, Lee, and Terry. Terry can easily bounce back from basically having zero production in game one. I don't see Crawford and Courtney Lee as the types of guys who are going to be able to bounce back from two just subpar performances. Crawford hasn't really been there before. He's a scorer, an actual scorer, but I don't think did he take any shots in game one? I'm not sure that he did.
No,
Courtney Lee.
Go ahead, sorry.
He's been a disappointment the entire year. He's got the worst year of his career in terms of point production and just overall productivity. I don't know if it's that he just doesn't fit in with the system or if he's been, I mean, he's been tentative. His jumper doesn't look very good, and he doesn't seem really to get into the flow of the game.
Yeah, I disagree with you. I disagree with you a little bit with Courtney Lee. I think he hasn't been consistently good, but he's had stretches where I think he's been where he looks like he's about to become the player. There was that stretch before Lee turned his ankle, where the combination, the starting backcourt of Avery Bradley and Courtney Lee were really starting to make something happen. They were working well with each other just in terms, you know, defense and yeah, you know, his shot hasn't been falling, you know, all year, and it's come in patches, but I thought he was active. I thought he was just in the game, and he was a different player than he was, you know, when he was trying to play alongside Rondo. But with Courtney Lee, the thing about him is that you forget that he played in the finals. You know, with Orlando, he played against the Lakers that year. You know, he famously missed that layup, whether I forget it was game one or game two, which, you know, it was unfortunate when you look at a guy's track record in terms of whether or not you can count on him in the clutch. But I think he's been there. He has those experiences. And no matter what happens to him, it's not going to be any worse than missing that shot. So I think if he's healthy, you know, if his ankle is all right and he can play, I would count on him maybe doing enough to in this series, like to at least enough to where we're not saying, okay, the reason they lost this is Courtney Lee. As long as he doesn't, you know, save any more balls from under his own hoop. But here's a question: what was Courtney Lee's number with the Magic?
You know, when you said Courtney Lee with the Magic, I didn't even remember that he played for the Magic. But I mean, I guess I'll go on a limb here, and for some reason.
So he's hard because I'm looking at his history right now. So he was one number with Orlando, another number with the Nets, another number with Houston, and then this year he repeated that number once. I'm not going to tell you which one because that would maybe give away the what number was Courtney Lee in Orlando question. But you want to take a guess? Do you know what number he was with the Rockets?
No, I have very little familiarity with Courtney Lee overall.
Apparently, that's a bad sign. You're not winning over our listeners right now.
This is a very bad example.
Well, he was
the only number that's popping into my head is 12, and I can't imagine that he couldn't have been 12 with the Magic because Howard was 12.
Right. Okay. So he was 11 on the Magic, like he is with the Celtics. He was 6 on the Nets, and he was 5 on the Rockets. I'm gonna let you. I want you to redeem yourself. And you know, it can't be easy, so we're going to go with that 2008-2009 Magic team.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you, what number was Rashard Lewis on the Magic?
9.
Okay, well done. I wouldn't know. Is he 9 on the Heat as well?
Picturing him, Lewis, yeah, he's 9.
How about, do you remember what Michael Petras' number was on that Magic team?
28.
No, he was 28 last year with the Celtics.
20.
Well done, man. That's impressive. And before Michael Petras was in Orlando, he was in Golden State.
Was he?
For 4 years, yeah.
And I suppose you're going to ask me what number he was on Golden State, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, because listen, I think the fact that you knew that he was number 20 on Orlando is pretty impressive, and I don't want to ruin it, but... You don't know. We'll move on.
No, I mean I would. I'm gonna have to say that he was 20 on Golden State as well.
No, he was number 2. Unfortunately, for you, I'm sure he's fine with it. What's your prediction for this series now? So they're down 1-0, taking the court again tomorrow night. Do you think that? I mean, obviously they have a chance. We've established that well at this point. Do you think that they're going to win?
You know, I do. I think they're going to take game 2.
Why? Give me a reason other than that you want it to happen.
Well, it's kind of for the same reason that I really think that the Heat are gonna fall at some point. I don't think they're gonna win. They're gonna win the title this year. But that's, I mean, I'll digress back to the Celtics.
So that I think that might kill any prediction that you're about to make. That you preempted that by saying it, that you don't think the Heat are gonna win. Like what? Maybe that's a conversation for another time. So give me why are the Celtics gonna win the series?
Because I just think that it's more gonna come down to the type of game where Pierce has a Paul Pierce-like playoff performance, of that alliteration. I think he's going to have a big game. I think he's going to make some big shots, and I think that's going to translate to the rest of the Celtics who have been underproduced in Game 1 to having, you know, an easier time of it. I mean, I think Terry is going to bounce back a little bit in Game 2. I think he's going to look for a shot more. And if Pierce is hitting, then obviously that's going to open up other shots for other guys. And yeah, another interesting point to make here, I thought in game one, that you know, Jeff Green had it going at one point, especially towards the end of the first half, and I thought they got away from that, and I couldn't really understand why, because when Green, when he's hitting and when he's hot, he's white hot, and he you know when his game is clicking because he's penetrating, he's getting to the line, he's making threes, he's got that complete game that he can have if he's focused and if he's aggressive. And that's kind of the problem, is he's not always really aggressive. But to go back to the problem
is that we don't know why he's not always aggressive. Like, not like deeper than that. It's like, why the hell isn't he always aggressive?
Well, I think, Van Gundy that said it yesterday, maybe? It's just not, he doesn't have that mentality. That's not his mindset. He's never been that kind of guy. He doesn't have that killer instinct. And you can even see it. I mean, the look on his face, he never really gets too, he doesn't get emotional about things. And he's kind of a plugger. He just kind of does his job and he doesn't show too much emotion. But, I mean, if he can glean a little bit of that emotion from a guy like Pierce, who we know to be a very emotional player, and he gets very, you know, sort of amped up, you know, in big situations, if he can glean some of that from a guy like Pierce or a guy like Garnett, then it's a different Jeff Green.
Right, but I'm saying, I'm done. Personally, I think if you can't glean that from day one of playing with Kevin Garnett, like there's something not right. This isn't the time now to think that, like, all right, maybe Jeff is gonna catch the fever from KG. Like, I don't know how anyone could not catch it. I think that's one of the greatest attributes that Kevin Garnett has, is that he is a player that when someone joins up with him, like, you so badly, like, forget, like, letting yourself down or achieving things for yourself. I think you're so, like, maybe it's part fear, but you just don't want to let Kevin Garnett down. You don't want to be the one to do that. So that's why he picks everyone up to that next level. And Listen, the fact that Jeff Green is not there yet is big. And part of it, I don't know if he just needs this team to be, I don't know if his own is the right word, but if he just, if Paul can't be there anymore. I think that, you know, Danny Ainge said that about a month or so ago, that, you know, whenever Paul's gone, you know, Jeff is the next small forward. And at that point, you know, he will be the guy that we count on a lot more. But it seems like Jeff is sort of bouncing back and forth between, you know, taking that initiative and dominating a game and just deferring to Paul and Kevin and just basically saying, like, listen, if you guys don't want to give me the ball every time down, like, not every time down, but I have these guys to bail me out. You know, I think it's too easy to say, all right, I'm playing with Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce, so I can count on them. But I don't know. It's really concerning, and I hate that we might have to wait for those guys to be gone for Jeff to fully realize what he needs to be every single time he takes the court. But I fear that might be the case.
Yeah.
Did I lose you there? I was rambling for a little bit. I think I might even lost myself for a second. So tell me real quickly, how many games are the Celtics going to win this in?
Say it again?
How many games are the Celtics going to win this?
It's going to take seven.
Seven? So you think that they're going to win a game seven in Madison Square Garden?
That's what it's going to take.
Okay.
I mean, they're not going to, let's put it this way, they're not going to win the next four.
Right.
I don't see any chance in hell of that happening.
So it's going to go at least six, most likely seven.
And I think, we know that the Celtics can get it done. Well, this year's team has yet to prove that, but historically, this core group, and we're talking about, obviously, Pierce and Garnett above all else, but they know how to get it done on the road in big situations. Pierce has done it time and again. I don't see any reason why they can't go into Madison Square Garden hypothetically in a Game 7 situation with everything on the line and take it. And if you're looking at which team is more likely to win a Game 7 in that situation, I'm taking the Celtics over the Knicks every time, because I don't think the Knicks have that sort of the mental fortitude to be able to get that done in Game 7 and sort of prove everybody right that the Celtics don't have it anymore. I think Game 7 goes to the Celtics in Madison Square Garden.
All right, so I'll have that on tape. I can bring that back out, and I envy your optimism. Real quick, I'm going to wrap this up, and then I'm going to let you go. I was looking at an old box score today from the 95 Celtics, an old It was a Knicks Celtics game where Patrick Ewing had 46 points on Eric Montross. So here are a few numbers. What number was Greg Minor on the Celtics?
Oh, Jesus, 9?
He was 9, very well. Blue Edwards.
Wow, man. Who?
Blue Edwards.
Blue Edwards?
Yeah. Theodore Blue Edwards, maybe is how you remember him.
Say it again?
Blue Edwards, like the color blue.
Yeah, so what is his real name?
Theodore.
Theodore Edwards. Dude, I don't even know who that is.
Really? He played for many teams. Remember that Eiffel 64 song or 65? I'm blue?
Yeah.
That had nothing to do with him. Purvis Ellison, what number was he?
43.
Okay, so Purvis Ellison was 43 on the Bullets.
But 29 on the Celtics.
Nice job.
I brought that back a little bit.
Yeah. I think that's it. That's a good first run for the podcast. So I guess I'll talk to you.
I'm sorry here, but I got to interject and ask that you give me a couple more because I'm feeling really bad about the Courtney Lee situation and frankly the Petrus Golden State situation. I feel like I should have had Petrus in Golden State. So just
rattle off a couple real quick. I'm gonna give you. There's a on NBA Reference. There's like this thing that they put on the top banner. It's called like the Elo Fan Ratings, which is like this really strange. I don't know how they figure it out, but like. Purvis Ellison is number 516 all time in the NBA. So I'll just give you some of the names that I have here in front of me. Lamon Murray on the Clippers, what number was he?
Oh boy, I can see him. I'm gonna go. Let's see, 21.
Okay, so Lamon Murray was 21 on Cleveland, and because it's Lamon Murray, I'm gonna give you that because. That would be insane for you to know that. He was number 7 on the Clippers.
7 was the other number I had in my head, but that's fair enough. And I believe he wore 31 in his career at some point as well.
he wore 31 for one season with the Nets in 2006 for 57 games. Nice job. He's also Tracy Murray's cousin. And
is he really?
And obviously he went to Cal, the alma mater of Jason Kidd and Kevin Johnson. All right, then what number? Oh, this is an easy one. Olden Polonies.
Well, you should have gone 0. You should have gone back to Tracy Murray, though, because.
Oh, I know. The thing is that, like, if I know the numbers, I know Tracy Murray was 31. So I feel like if I know it, it's not. I'm sure it's challenging. But like I said to you off the air, like, I want you to impress me.
Tracy Murray was not 31.
Really?
No.
Yes, he was. He was 31 with Portland and Houston.
I think I disagree with you there because I know he.
If you disagree with me, you're disagreeing with the internet. Are you thinking 30? No. Are you thinking 35?
No, I'm thinking 30.
He was 30 for one season with the Lakers. 31 games, he wore 30. Maybe he was 30 at Cal. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah.
Let me look that up real quick.
Oh man. I'm looking up.
Yeah, he was 30. No, he was 30 at UCLA. So that's legit.
Those Raptors jerseys, man. Those are terrible.
What, like the Stoudemire years?
Hey, whatever the original Raptor jerseys, I guess, those are just
atrocious. I mean,
they're abhorrent.
I mean, it was literally. It looks like they were, you know, they put the call out to like a fourth grade class, and like draw a dinosaur, and whichever dinosaur happens to at least have like 4 limbs as opposed to, you know, 7, that you will win the.
And I mean, clearly they didn't understand what a raptor was as a dinosaur because the mascot looks nothing like a raptor.
It looks like a T-Rex, right?
The farthest thing from it. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's a take on somebody's part up in Toronto. Well done, guys. Way to go.
Yeah, and so that was okay. So that was the Stoudemire. That was Camby. Didn't Vince wear those like when he first got there too?
He might have, but I feel like he was there. He might have been the first year that they transitioned to the next round of pretty bad uniforms. I mean, when your main color is purple, that's pretty much a critical error there.
Yeah, especially that kind of purple. I mean, I'm down with like a little bit of purple. Like I thought, I don't know. Actually, the Jazz jerseys when they went purple for a little bit, I did not like those. That was the first transition from like the old school Malone Stockton jerseys, right? They went purple.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But purple, I think so. That sounds right.
The Laker purple. I mean, obviously, like we're raised to hate it, but that's not too bad.
Well, maybe that's where the internal hatred comes from. Is just.
I mean, you think about it from a Boston standpoint. Yeah. You got the Ravens and the Lakers rocking purple.
Yeah.
That's not good.
That's a tough one.
All right, man. Well, listen, I have to go. We have to stop this. It's too long. I'll talk to you later.
All right, see you.
Bye.